You are listening to Tech Reads, interviews with emerging technology thought leaders. Our sponsor is Softech, the premier technology trade association that has been serving Northern Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo County since 1997. Our mission is to create Softech moments where people connect, explore ideas, and create new business opportunities. Learn more at softec.org.
Hello, everyone. This is Brian Schwartz from Tech Reads. This is the podcast sponsored by Softech. We interview authors, thought leaders, and people who have very interesting ideas to share with you. My goal is to pull out some of the things that you don't hear in the book, but encourage you to still buy the book because that's where you're going to get the key messages from the author. So tonight we have Julia Stegman with us. She has come up from Paso Robles,
yes,
is that right?
Yes, Paso Robles, right.
So we're here in San Luis Obispo. I've got Karen Edwards, Bob Dumichal, and
Greg Follett.
And we are here at Laura's College in San Luis Obispo and very grateful to Karen and the crew for hosting us to do these in a live studio audience. So I always encourage our attendees here to ask some questions as well. But what I'll start with is just a little bit about yourself, Julia, and kind of the crux of the book that you wrote.
Sure. So I'm Julia Stegman. I'm a certified career coach, author, and speaker with over 30 years of experience in the tech industry. I was a tech executive and an executive recruiter. I wrote Discover Meaningful Work, which includes my signature system, the five phases of a career transition. And I wrote this system, I created the system for people in the tech industry, especially those that feel stuck, unfulfilled, or navigating a layoff. And my goal is really twofold. One is to provide hope, and the second is to have a really clear, structured system for navigating really meaningful career transitions in their own terms. They define what meaningful is for them.
So a lot of companies or individuals offer on-ramps, but you're really offering an off-ramp.
Yes.
Which is right. An interesting niche to find.
Right.
So Discover Meaningful Work. So Bob had a good point. Can you give us kind of, in your words, a synopsis of what the book is about?
Sure. So I've read a lot of career development books over the years. I love those books. And I got something out of all of them. But I've had this book in my head for over 20 years. And once I retired, I finally spent the time to get it on paper. And it's really about a comprehensive system of going from thinking about making a transition all the way through making the transition. A lot of people jump straight to the fifth phase, job search execution. They go right into, I have to leave this job, or I need to find a new job, and they just start looking for something, probably like they did do, right? So this book helps them to step back, really think about their life. There are a lot of exercises and assessments in the first phase to really help people step back, because a lot of people are going 80 with their hair on fire. And you can lose a sense of who you are, your strengths, your values, when you're not only going fast, but if you're in a toxic environment or there's mergers and acquisitions, a lot of investors come in and just really put a lot of pressure on the employees. And this really, they're not always clear as to where they are and how they're feeling about their career at the time. So these exercises and assessments help them step back and really get clear on what's important to them. And there's an exercise in the book around the three seasons. And Brian, you and I were talking about this a minute ago. There's the spring, which is childhood through formal education. The summer, which is kind of your optimal earning years. And then there's the fall, which is paying it forward and self-actualization. And what I find is people's goals and priorities are very different in each of those phases, right? We're talking about, Brian, that people in the early phases have a lot more flexibility, right? People in that middle, that summer phase, they tend to have a lot of responsibility, whether they took on a big role or they also have a family or loved ones they're caring for. And then things get a little more flexible again in the fall, where people are thinking about retirement. A lot of people I talk with plan on working, you know, for as long as they can because they want to. Not full-time, but part-time, and they have more financial freedom and they can pivot to something that's more meaningful. So meaning is really helping them define what's meaningful for them a lot of that causes people just to stop. That's the big thing at the very beginning, stop and to pull back and think about, you know, what's working, what's not. I have two very colorful wheels in the book. One helps them assess their life on 11 or 12 different elements. Same thing on the career. And they actually pick a ranking for each of those elements. And there's something in the mind about circling a number, putting an assessment on that, ranking it, and then identifying what are the top three gaps, both in their life and in their career. That's where you start in the book. And I've had a lot of feedback from people that it's really valuable just to stop and think, you know, just to assess where am I at this stage of my life and what's missing and what do I want to really plan for the future.
Yeah, and, you know, I was thinking about my own transition. So in 2008, 2009, you know, that was a very difficult time in our world. If for those of us who were working during it, I was in sales. I remember the CEOs to come in and he would say, okay, you know, who do I have to lay off today? Because it was on us that we weren't selling enough. Well, no one was buying anything.
Yeah.
And I didn't hire all these people, but it was on us. And he was posting a leaderboard every week with the sales numbers of every salesperson and sending it out to the entire company. So you'd walk around the company, and if you were on the bottom of that list, you got the stink eye and people were mad at you because you weren't selling enough as the next guy. Plus, you knew you were pretty much next to go. And it was such a toxic environment because that forced salespeople to steal accounts and really just throw people under the bus and undermine. So I got sort of so angry and disillusioned by that whole world that I felt like I was pushed out of the corporate environment and just thrown out on the road. And I had to sort of figure things out on my own. And I knew I didn't want to trust. I just lost all my faith and trust in a big corporation.
Yeah.
And so it left me with a really, like, I don't know, jaded view of corporate America.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever regained that. I've never established it. So I was able to, now 15 plus years, I'm still independent and kind of driving my own ship. But it hasn't all been easy.
No, it's not. And I've been on a similar trajectory. I was at Hewlett Packard for over 20 years. That was in the heyday of HP. The industry was growing. I was changing roles every 2 or 3 years. There was so much opportunity. And then the merger with Compaq hit and everything changed.
Mm-hmm.
So when I decided to leave, I went to progressively smaller companies, you know, until I started my own business. And that really has been my favorite. So I hear this from a lot of people, this toxic environment. But, you know, not everybody's meant to own their own business. I do have a chapter in the book encouraging people to really think about that. And I certainly have a lot of people tell me, I'm thinking I'm going to do consulting now. People in tech have so much knowledge, right, and so much experience. And they a lot of them can do consulting. But for those who really see themselves as an employee, I think their path is they've got to figure out where's the growth, right? So what companies are growing, which job functions are growing, and pivot to those, whether that means taking certifications or gaining, you know, taking on a special project to try to pivot into a different function. If you're in a function that's on the decline and you stay there, it's only gonna get worse, right? So really, you know, taking some time to study and think about where the growth is, that's where it creates a tailwind for your career, not a headwind.
I like that. Yeah, I mean, and it all kind of worked out fine, I guess. But and it gave us the freedom to kind of, we always moved to wherever the company moved us to.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first time, the reason we were able to move back to Central Coast is because it was up to us. Like, I didn't need to be in Fort Collins because of the company I was working for.
Nice.
So that was a wonderful thing. But it does, as you said, it was like the mindset of an employee is very different than the mindset of a owner, right? Everything falls on you.
Yep.
You know, you can't have other people doing other functions. Your customer service, your sales, your accounting, you know, you're the CEO, you're the COO, you're doing all, wearing all these different hats that you've never worn before.
Yeah.
And trying to figure it out and trying to keep enough money coming in so that you don't, I don't know, I mean, or if you're not good at going and raising money or kind of really good at articulating your ideas. And it's just, there's a lot of different routes to entrepreneurship. And I don't know, Bob, you were always self-employed or the owner. Did you ever have a period where you were the employee? I mean, you worked in the service, but.
Well, I worked for Kraft Foods Service. I worked in the military, which is obviously
mm-hmm.
a captive employer.
Did you find that it was hard to like transition from that headspace to the new owner mindset?
Not really.
Okay.
But most of my transitions over the years, I've always been working on whatever's next at the same time that I'm working through the final stages of it. So I went into my job at Kraft and I quit, and my boss said, "That's fine, you just can't leave." I did a consulting contract, and that became the basis.
You're very valuable, okay.
That's a nice soft landing, yeah.
Well, it is. Yeah. But most of the time, you know, the businesses have transitioned in steps across the different ideas. So I've always had
an evolution.
One foot in whatever's next, and one foot in whatever today is. And, you know, it's trying to find that balance and work your way across that cobblestone.
What have you seen as sort of the biggest maybe pitfalls or challenges that people, especially who have achieved a lot, are now dealing with this maybe existential crisis for the first time? And how are you helping them through that transition? Because it's got to be painful.
Yeah, it's very painful. And I've worked with so many executives that they're super strong at what they do, but when it comes to it's time to find another job, it's not something they have the muscle for, the skill set for, and they feel very lost. So what I have heard from a lot of executives is, you know, when you're climbing the ladder and you're making good money, it comes down to if you're spending it all. So one of the things we talk about in the book is if you want flexibility, it's so important to have a year's worth of personal expenses set aside so that in case you lose your job or if you want to make a pivot, you have the flexibility. And that's tough in expensive places like California, New York, and others, Boston. But not living with all the way up to your full means is like really, really important in this labor market. Because there's just not the loyalty that there was before.
No, and I do fear that with the younger generation that the world is more expensive than it's ever been. So they're immediately kind of stretched thin, which sort of locks them into a decision they've made. They've got to stick with it because there's enough money coming in. But, you know, what are some strategies that people are using to navigate making some transitions while they're not able to sort of cut the noose of the current income? And I used to call it corporate welfare. I was on corporate welfare for years because I was there just for the paycheck. Like I despise my job, my boss, like everything about it, but I couldn't afford to leave.
Right. A very pragmatic way is a side hustle. There was an interesting statistic, I think millennials, it was outrageously high, like 80% of millennials have a side hustle. And it's a great way to test out something, to see if you like it, to see if there's market demand. And many of these side hustles kind of ramp up pretty quickly. If you're interested, subscribe to entrepreneur.com. And they have another side hustle newsletter in addition to that. And it's just full of people's stories about how they've made these, they've turned them into, you know, viable businesses for themselves.
I like that. And actually that does, what I did was a side hustle. So I did this book, 15 Reviews. So while I was still employed, I went out and interviewed 50 owners, entrepreneurs. And because I was in sales, I already had a relationship with these companies. So it was mainly just asking the IT manager I was typically working with, do you mind if I go ask the owner a few questions? And they would say, well, what's this about? I said, well, this is this book I'm working on called 50 Entrepreneurs. And they're like, well, sure. And then, of course, I would sit down with them and they love to talk about their story, right? I mean, they're very proud of what they've built. So it was a very good engagement. So it led to all these other things. But it was a side hustle for a year until at the end of that, I had essentially what became a book. And then one of the people I interviewed said, can I buy them? And I said, sure, how many? He said, I'll take 300. I'm like, oh, okay, that's like enough to pay for like, maybe there's something here. So that was a side hustle that it was not intentional.
Yeah.
It was more of just discovering something. I was just really like, enjoyed it. Every interview I was like driven for the next one because I learned something new.
Yeah.
But it was not an intentional side hustle. And speaking of side hustles, Bob, you're leading a group here in a couple of weeks. The side hustle, what are you calling it?
Sandbox.
The side hustle sandbox. So what is your vision on that?
Cool.
Over the course of my career, I've had a side hustle all the time. I've had two or three of them most of the time because part of them crash and burn. It's kind of entertaining to watch, but we're looking at, you know, how do you do that process? And I think in today's world, the way that the corporations have gone to where, you know, laying people off causes your stock price to go up. Mm-hmm. So it's very attractive to executive staff to do that. And so you're one board meeting away from being fired at all times. And so you really should have a backup plan.
Yeah.
Mm. Not to have a plan B and C is, well, today, foolish. You know, 50 years ago, you went to work for a corporation, you worked there for your entire life, they gave you a gold watch at 65, and you went up and played golf.
Yeah.
That doesn't work anymore.
No.
Because you don't make it to the, you know, you don't make it to the gold watch.
Exactly. And the side hustle, if you don't have savings, can help you build the savings. Right? So if you just are really disciplined and just try to keep that side hustle money so you can cover your personal expenses, then you're in a much better position risk management wise to start that business full time or pivot to it full time.
And if you want to vet an idea, get someone to give you money for it.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a part
the
of
the ultimate vetting of a idea.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and it could get you into sort of a new industry that's mm-hmm. totally unrelated to what you've been doing.
Sure.
And I'm curious about the successful transitions you can share with us that people have made out of technology. Mm-hmm. You know, the books that we did, so I did these 50 interviews books where people were interviewing people in all these different industries. And one of the most successful books was called Physicians in Transition. Mm. It was doctors who didn't want to be doctors anymore. Mm. And the people had successfully gotten out of medicine with these huge like loans they had to pay off, right?
Yeah.
It was a very, it's you're sort of stuck in that field because mm-hmm. there's typically six-figure loans that you take to pay for medical school. So I'm curious what your kind of some examples of people who successfully got out of
yeah.
what they were doing.
There are so many more opportunities outside of tech. And if you think about, I've got a chapter on this in the book, I call them tech adjacent industries. Automotive, industrial automation, you name it. They all are deploying so much technology, they all have software business units. And people at 100-year-old Rockwell Automation or John Deere Tractors, they didn't grow up in software business models. They have to hire these people from tech. So when I was a recruiter, I placed a couple of people, one in particular, she had been at a SaaS company. It was super toxic. Really bad manners in terms of the leadership, just not treating people well, and it was really affecting her. And she said, I've got to make a change. Same time, I had this amazing client, Rockwell Automation. So I put these two together, and so she took her customer success leadership experience in a SaaS model, which they're always on the bleeding edge of that in terms of best practice, brought that into Rockwell and closed the gap like super quick. She's deploying agents and all kinds of stuff, AI agents, and
getting to do a lot of fun stuff.
Yeah. So here's this.
And valued.
And valued. This 100-year-old Rockwell Automation, mm-hmm. stable, super well managed, and this super innovative software business unit. Such an interesting, you know, intersection.
Right.
And they thrived.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's good. I hadn't considered that there's probably companies you hadn't considered, like, oh, I've never worked for that company, but they are probably desperately deploying technology and could really use someone like you to bring something new to the company that they haven't had before.
Yeah, and there are all kinds of things. People are trying to, what I hear from a lot of people are two things. One is mission, and the second is culture. So I want to do something that's more meaningful in terms of what the company does. And I also want a culture that's more consistent with my values, right? I mean, I hear this all the time. That's why one of my assessments is a values assessment. Get people really clear on what's important to them so they can test the culture of the company against their values. But there are just a plethora of really interesting companies doing interesting work. Just have to take the time to step back to say what's important to me, and then do some research on who are some of the growing companies in interesting areas. I think ag tech, for example, is really interesting. I'm a gardener. Sorry, I don't have my cup. I'm a gardener. And, if ag tech had been viable 10 years ago, I would have pivoted. They've got vertical growing or hydroponics and stuff where they're growing all year round in all kinds of climates. They're using drones to have less fertilizer on the field for planting. The combines and tractors are completely autonomous. You know, it's just an amazing transformation going on in that very manual industry to almost everything's automated. So there are all kinds of cool things depending on what's important to people, what their passions are.
So how do you position yourself if you came from this one company?
Yeah.
You don't know anything about this new company. How do you convince them to like talk to you more about what you know because you know nothing about their business?
It all goes back to the transferable skills.
Okay.
Right, and the strengths. And there's a really good strengths assessment in the book that's very well respected in the career coaching industry. And that is like universal across all industries. And so it's important to take one of the criticisms I have of a lot of the books that I've read over the years, career development books, is they say, write down your top five strengths. I'm like, well, I don't know. I might be clear on a couple of them, but there are such good assessment tools now that will tell you what you're really good at. These are your natural strengths. You're born with these things, right? And it's so powerful for people to see that, especially if they're in a toxic environment or they're not happy, just to get really grounded in what their strengths are. And then from there, you can pivot that. Like what we do with people with their resumes is they go through the strengths and the values assessments, and that becomes part of their elevator pitch in that top paragraph on their resume, right? And if you write that in a way where those competencies come forward, they can be pivoted into any industry. If a leader can see that you have a strong track record and a functional area that they need to hire, and they see what your core strengths are and your values, if companies are growing in these other industries, they need to hire people that have very specific gaps, and they just don't have them in their company, right? They've got to hire them from tech or some other industry. It's just a matter of packaging yourself where you can connect with that other industry.
Well, and every interview I'm doing now, we really can't not talk about the topic of AI.
Yeah.
So how do you see AI benefiting people who are making that transition? When you said strengths assessment, the first thing I was like, oh, I'd build a strong value proposition. So I might have AI help me take my results as a strengths assessment and help me write a value proposition targeting a specific company. Because, you know, that's what it does so well when you start to prompt it.
Totally.
It can create really this killer cover letter. And if you're not using AI, you're probably at a disadvantage.
Right.
But what are you seeing in sort of in your experience of some of the ways that it's really giving some people an advantage or helping them through this transition?
The first piece is there's a prompt that I create in the book where if you're thinking about a certain position in a certain industry, you can ask ChatGPT or your favorite AI engine, tell me what the core competencies are for this job, right? Chief customer officer in a SaaS company. Boom, they nailed it. I mean, I was like blown away. Mm. Everybody that's done this that I've coached is blown away.
Because it has all the job listings that
That's what it's so good at, right? Yeah. Is aggregating. Mm-hmm. So you take that core competency list, you layer that into your resume, the headings of it, right? And then you layer in your experience with that. And you can connect the dots so strongly, even in somebody else's industry.
And you come in speaking with confidence because you've already done your due diligence that, I'm the right fit for this role because here's why.
Right.
And I do think it comes down to like right now I'm working on a software product that I've been really working on for 15 years, but now AI is finally allowing me to fill in the gaps that I couldn't build right as myself.
Yeah.
But I realized the other night is like, why should I do this? Because I'm the only one who can do this with my unique background and understanding specifically my target audience and what they need, because I've been in this for 15 years. I know exactly what my customer needs. So there's no one else who can build it. So that was like the reason why I said, this is why I have to do it, because no one else can. But if you go into a job interview with that kind of confidence, and this is exactly why you need to hire me, I think that you're in an advantage that they're probably going to, you're going to be differentiated from the people who are coming in just looking for a job, right?
Yeah, totally.
You know, tell me what to do. I'll do anything.
Right.
No, you want to come in there with some
And that is authority. A problem. I have heard that a lot with people. I can do anything. I can do that job and that job. Okay, I back them up. I say, we got to talk about your strengths. You got to play to your strengths.
You can't do everything perfect.
And people want to hire someone who's been there, done that. That's just the labor market because they can, right? They can do that. It could be in a different industry, like we're just talking about, right? But you got to play to your strengths and leverage from there, for sure.
Well, and I got to believe, I have to get you in touch with Catherine Troutman, but she essentially for the last 20 years, she's been placing people in federal jobs. And you can't imagine what she's dealing with now. Like that's her whole business was how to get a federal job.
Mm.
And now all these people are coming back to her and say, Catherine, I got thrown out of a federal job. How do I possibly get back into the private sector?
Mm.
Because I've been a government worker for all these years, but there's got to be thousands, if not millions, of people that are being faced with this reality of,
sure,
like the plan has just been, the rug's been pulled out from under them.
Yeah, it's all, I would say, go back to the strengths, the transferable strengths, and then compare those to the core competencies, right, of the positions in the public sector, and there's got to be intersections there, right?
I think that strengths assessment is key.
Yeah.
Question? Anything? Anything come to mind? Karen, you know, as you're in the education field, and you're helping a lot of students try to level up to the skills that you guys are kind of assessing the needs out there, and you've got something coming up, like you're leaning into AI big time. What are you seeing as sort of the advantage, or what are some of the most successful students who are getting good jobs doing differently than those who might be like, where's my next job? You know, where's my job?
I know my colleague Greg can speak to this too, working in career services, but from what I've seen, I think students are really trying to reflect on what they are good at. We have a lot of students that are transitioning to different careers. The average age of our student here at Lawrence College is 44, oldest being 79 currently, which I think is amazing.
Wow.
Most are transitioning, so I think it's using the AI to be able to articulate what those strengths are and to pass through those applicant tracking systems,
yeah,
because those seem like they're the walls that are being built, mm-hmm, when you might have a great candidate, and we see those students,
yeah,
and might hit that wall because there's a, you know, a barrier there. They need to have that text and that cover letter or that resume.
It's a great point. I think they're doing a lot of good things there. The ATS systems, applicant tracking systems, are like a black hole, and it just makes people so depressed by, you know, applying to all these places and never hearing back. I strongly suggest that people focus on their network. So use AI to find out who the growing companies are in the areas that could hire you, right? They're interested in them. They hire functions that you would like to play, right? And then use LinkedIn and everything else in your arsenal to find out who works there, who knows somebody there. So many positions right now are coming about from a friend of a friend. It's not even someone you know. It's someone who your friend or your family,
right,
member knows, right? I mean, it's so important now more than ever.
That's great.
Well, and Amazon, so here locally, I had an interview with them about 5 years ago. And the only reason I had an interview is my friend worked there and submitted my resume. And he said, don't even submit your resume through the main system. He goes, I won't be able to submit your resume.
Mm.
I will submit your resume to the hiring manager. And because there's that trust,
right?
You're a known entity. So I broke through the vetting process,
awesome,
right off the bat. But the vast majority of those resumes sent in don't even, unless you're like, you know, top of your class, you've already achieved like massive success.
Right.
I think it's very hard for you to get in without a connection. So I did want to ask you about how important who you know is still.
It's everything.
Yeah.
It is absolutely everything. So, you know, networking has to be something that is a side hustle. I mean, it has to be given that much attention.
Networking is,
right,
a side hustle. I love,
yeah,
that. That's a good catchphrase.
Yeah. It's, you know, conferences and taking speaking opportunities, just attending conferences and listening, any kind of community-based things, anything in your industry or the industry you're interested in, if you want to pivot. It's so incredibly important. And what goes along with that is being okay asking for help. You know, you have to ask for help. You have to be willing to ask people, hey, I'm interested in, be clear on what you're looking for, right? Your elevator pitch of, this is what I'm looking for. Do you know anybody in this or this company? Right. And they may say, I don't, but I have a friend who works there. And it happens all the time. But if you don't ask, you don't know. So that's a really important behavioral trait that people have to really embrace, is you got to ask for help. And it's,
yeah,
okay.
Well, and I'm a believer, if you don't know your purpose is to find your purpose. And I think that it's
yeah,
the same thing with meaning. Like if,
yeah,
everything is pretty meaningless right now, like nothing excites you, you need to start turning those rocks over, because something will strike. But,
sure,
if you're not out there just throwing yourself into new ideas and new things and new networking events, I mean, go to probably networking groups that you would never go to.
Right.
Go for it with a gardening group or a hiking club or a come do a cold plunge out in Morro Bay. Like, there's things you can do that are like pushing your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
But if you always hang out with the same people, especially in tech.
Yes.
So if you want to break out of tech, and let's talk about that a little more.
Yeah.
You need to probably get away from people in tech.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you say? Like, yeah. It's important for you to sort of step outside that world.
For sure.
And it was kind of a crazy idea 10 years ago to think that someone would want to leave tech because everyone wanted to get into tech.
Yeah.
But now you're seeing it, you know, like I said, you're on a very interesting niche because you are...
Tech has become a utility. It's no longer an industry. Tech is everywhere, in everything.
Yeah.
And unless so, you're a monk or a Amish.
Well, no, I mean, I think that one of the things that I see with people is they go out and they look for the job, the jobs that are open, rather than going out and saying to people, here's my ideal job, here's what I want to do, rather than...
Create my position.
Well, being intentional.
There are people that go out and customize the resume for each person that they submit it to,
mm-hmm.
so they're going to change personalities and desires for each job that comes along. No, you got to go out there and say, I am this, because otherwise, you know...
You're a chameleon, you're a manipulator, you're a shyster.
You're a solution to all, to everything, and a solution to nothing. So I tell people all the time, I say, you know, write out what your ideal job is and then go find that someone who needs that job.
And give it to Bob because he is one of the most connected people I know on the Central Coast.
Yeah.
He is really a good person to know.
That's awesome.
And it's probably good to find people in the area.
On SoftTech's email list,
you're right.
Job I'm looking for.
That's great.
And there are cases I know that resulted in people finding a job.
Yeah.
Not because they found the job, but because someone found someone that wanted that ideal thing.
Yeah.
And I think that if you go into an interview where someone looked at it and said they invited you in because what you said appealed to them, the game's half over.
Yeah. I want to spend a minute, if we could, too, on some of the really cool jobs in AI. Right. So,
please.
Like, if you're interested in AI and want to drive that train, I was just reading yesterday, like, chief AI officer is on my top of my list in terms of emerging leadership roles. I read yesterday they're making $1 million+. That's how strategic those roles are and how few people have enough experience to be in them. The other one on the technical side, there were a couple of them. There were, and I'm sure you guys would, you know, be familiar with these as well. Machine learning engineer, data scientist, and AI research scientist, right? Those are all big. The other one I wanted to mention is on the customer facing side. So the AI and machine learning solutions consultant. Everything I'm reading is saying that companies are really struggling with implementing AI into their business processes, right? So executives are saying, tell me what I need to do to invest in infrastructure, cross-functional teams. What is it? What's the magic that makes AI really give me a 20% expense reduction in my company? And these solution consultants are the ones that are doing that. They're super exciting roles if you like to go in and look at a business model and figure out how to reframe it into something else. And they're very lucrative roles too. So there are a lot of cool things in AI if that interests you, right? If you want to drive that train.
Well, and I remember reading something a little while ago where one of the opportunities is you go find these businesses that are financially struggling a little bit and you inject them with AI solutions where now all of a sudden their cost goes way down.
Nice.
And you don't change anything else, but you sort of redesign their processes with technology because they're doing things a very antiquated way.
Right.
It's, you know, you think about these companies have been around for 50 years and all of a sudden one day shut their doors.
Yeah.
Like out of the blue. I mean, even take something like Rite Aid. They're closing all their stores. Like, where did they miss the technology adoption piece there? Of course, it's not the solution to everything because Whole Foods is apparently now closing a bunch of stores, and Amazon came in and bought them.
Yeah.
Like, that's a little bit of a rude awakening for a technology company to kind of fail at this idea of coming in. But, you know, they had visions of, you know, clerkless stores, right, where you just go in and you grabbed what you want, and when you walked out the door, your card was charged. I don't think that ever kind of got to the point where it is, but I think
it's interesting to listen to this conversation because an early stage mentor of mine said never, ever go after a cost saving side of a business. Always go after the income side because the upside is 80% greater in increasing revenue than it is in cutting costs.
Mm.
If you go in to cut costs, you are part of an expense department. and you're the first thing cut once you've done it.
Yeah.
So I think that you have to kind of look at it and think, you know, it's not the 20% savings in AI, it's the 80% increase in revenue possible by using the tool properly.
Yeah, and plenty are using it to improve the customer experience as an example, which would be good, both new customers and existing customers. You know how CEOs are, though. They're all in this bandwagon now. I'm looking for my 20%. You know, some bellwether puts it out there, and then they all have this pressure to go do it. So I'm with you. I'm not sure that that's the full answer, but tech executives are looking for that 20%. Maybe start there.
Well, and maybe you do there projects, initially is like some reluctance or friction to it. So for example, I was very against these restaurants where you went in and you could only order from the kiosk. They literally would no longer take your order. But the other day, I walked in, there was this old couple ordering from the lady at the register. There was a kiosk right next to them. I placed my order and I got my food back before they even finished placing their order. So I would have been behind them waiting for my food for another 20 minutes while they figured out what they wanted. But I appreciate now the restaurants that have those kiosks because it's a shortcut. Like you cut the line. It's almost like the fast pass at the amusement park. Like
that's putting the technology on the income side rather than the expense side, because you can't cut 20% out of McDonald's production process.
Good point.
But
yeah.
You can increase the sales side dramatically by doing that.
Yeah, it's good.
So you got to pay attention to where you look for
applying
the
it.
Employed.
Yeah.
Because you can either be in the cost cutting where the mission is to keep everything, all the expenses, including payroll, as low as possible, as opposed to the revenue side, where you're saying, how can we pay these people more money?
Yeah.
So now that you've gone through this process of writing this book, I think it took you a couple of years, right?
A year, yeah.
A year. What have you learned? What has this done for you as to help your business? Because I think it's a lot of work, and it was a huge leap of faith because you're probably putting other work aside to focus on the book. It's kind of the same thing with a side hustle. You have to make that decision about how much time am I really putting in. And what happened with 50 interviews is it became like 80% of my day was being spent on my side hustle. And that's when I knew it was time to just cut. You know, it was no longer the side hustle.
Right.
But I'm just curious what the whole process was. Was it really enlightening? Did it give you new insights that you couldn't have grasped previously?
When I retired from my executive recruiting business, I just feel like it wasn't complete. Something was incomplete. And that's when I realized this book that had been in my head for 20 years, I needed to get it on paper. So much to my husband's chagrin, I didn't really retire. Now I'm telling him it's retirement and this is my project. I think he would see it a little differently. But it's really now, this is my project in retirement, getting this book to where it needs to go, where it can ease the pain and get people into a place where they're more fulfilled. And it's really a matter of balancing that with also traveling with my husband. And that's where I am with this, is just, you know, what's the sweet spot in terms of balancing it, which is a fun challenge to have.
Well, you've got an asset, a tool that you didn't have before. You've sort of developed a piece of software. It's in the form of a book.
Right.
But essentially, it does the same thing. I would love to see you turn that into an app. I do think that's the direction a lot of nonfiction authors are ultimately going to have to go, because younger people are accustomed to getting all their information on a phone.
Right.
And you have to figure out how to port that into, which the possibilities now are endless with AI. I mean,
sure.
You can really... that's where I, as a publishing consultant, see publishing going. All these books are going to become apps.
Yeah.
And being someone who's involved and successful at able to transition that at a much lower price point. It used to cost $10,000 to make an app. And then that was on the low end.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that, I'm sure, for a fraction now once you figure out the recipe. There's a lot of learning up front, right?
Yeah.
We're going through this learning curve. I don't care who you are right now, there is a steep learning curve to all of this.
Yeah.
The hype is selling it that it's so easy that anyone can do it. But you and I know we're spending a lot of time working with these tools.
Yep.
It takes time and energy.
It does. And my path that I'm thinking on right now is speaking and workshops, especially the workshops, so I can see where the traction is in terms of, you know, with the live audience. And then I was thinking online training, but app is really even more interesting. I hadn't really thought about that, so thanks for that.
Well, and I've heard that 80% of the people who buy online courses don't make it past the first couple lessons.
So that's bad.
Which this, like, there's data to prove this.
Yeah.
People are very excited and they basically buy it, but then they realize, oh man, this is more work than I thought it was going to be, or they lose interest, right? We like, we look at that and we're like, this isn't fun anymore. And so now, and I do think that that's a big part of sticking to something. Like right now with this, developing this app, there's a lot of pain I'm going through in learning how all these things glue together, right? Yeah. I told you that if you had a software development background, I got to believe this is easier because I'm using Node.js. Well, Node.js is a great tool, but you also know how, have to know how to sort of put all these modules together and make them work. And you have to have a back-end database and how to turn that into an app and all this. So it's very, you know, it's painful to have to kind of learn all this stuff. And we want the answers right away.
Right.
But we need to stick with it and coming back to the why do you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I told you at the beginning, the reason I want to do this, I have to do this, is because I'm the only one who can do it. Like, there's no one else that's going to come out with this.
Right.
So.
That's good.
I'm not sure that you're right in that. I mean, just as a contrary
opinion
to it, I think that if you're dealing with that level of information,
mm-hmm.
nobody uses a phone to read 296 pages. I'm sorry, it just.
Right.
Does anybody use a phone for reading that much? No. You buy a book. You use a desktop, but you don't do that on a phone.
Right, as a in the form of a book, I agree with you.
Well, somehow you have to digest the information in the book and convey it. So, I think that it's not reasonable to expect people to start to digest that volume of information through a 3.5-inch wide screen.
My idea is the way you can supplement, like how quickly you can move through a worksheet. Like, let's talk about one of your worksheets or your exercises.
So Bob, to your point, this is why I don't have an ebook, right? Because I didn't feel like I needed the reader to interact with the material. This is a 2-page summary from all the prior 7 chapters, where every time they go through a chapter, they write in their insights so that they could start looking at the patterns. Right across their values, their strengths, industries that are interesting to them, functional jobs that are interesting to them, and look at the patterns. And then they can share this with mentors, a career coach, former bosses, et cetera, to help them figure out what their career path should be.
That's even more difficult to put on a phone.
Yeah. So that's why I went with
you've got 2 pages.
Well, okay, but you basically put that all into a chatbot. So they're interacting, they're answering the questions, and the chatbot gives them a nice report at the end of them filling everything out.
There you go.
And it's beautifully formatted, and they hit print.
There you go.
And they can go in and they can make changes to it. They can, and it can prompt them, depending on the direction they're going down, it can basically do like a sidebar where now, we need to go back and refine this a little bit because you didn't answer this question. So back to why I think, the future is these apps and AI is because you can go so much further than you can with a piece of paper or a book because of the interaction level that AI is able to do. I mean, this app, Typebot, is blowing my mind at how you can build, essentially take a worksheet and have now an interactive session as if they were sitting down with you.
Nice.
And it's a conversation with a bot, but it's based on all of your content. So you're able to see, most importantly, you're able to see how they're interacting with it.
Mm.
So you get a summary, a thread of all the answers that they put in.
Mm-hmm.
So you're able to get insights that you would never get by just sending your book out.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah.
Really interesting. Just a different way to get there. Yeah.
So anything that anything else you want to share as we kind of conclude this that we didn't touch on that you want to make sure people really grasping a little bit how they can kind of get a hold of you and get a hold of the book.
Sure. Do you want me just to run through the other phases real quickly?
Please.
So we talked about the first phase, career exploration. The second is market research, where they can look at tech. I've documented the 8 growth areas where job growth is supposed to be high in demand, those tech adjacent industries, and then if they're thinking about starting their own business. So 3 chapters to really broaden their horizons. There's so many interesting opportunities out there, not just tech, right? The third is documenting their career path and their career plan. 3% of the population documents their goals, and those that do, 78% of them achieve them. That's powerful. So just documenting their decisions for their short-term 2-year and 5-year plans. The fourth one is career communication documents. Most people don't like spending their time on their resume or their LinkedIn profile, or tailoring cover letters. Somebody brought that up earlier. This is all very instructional, step by step, just marches you through the work that, you know, you may not want to do. I had a former colleague just call me and say, "Oh my gosh, I just went through your resume section and now I know why no one's calling me back. My resume was horrible," right? So it just marches you through what a good resume would look like for you. And then the last one, like we talked about early on, is the job search execution. So how to build a marketing plan, what are good networking opportunities, and how to schedule that and make that a priority, like we talked about, a side hustle, interviewing, all the traps that people fall into. I put a lot of feedback in there from my clients, things to avoid when you show up to an interview.
And there's a lot of practical advice in this book, because it's really a workbook format, right?
Right.
It's intended to really engage the reader more than just reading a book from start to finish. You have to put in the time and energy to sort of stop, apply what you
exactly.
And all that.
So there'll be content, there'll be advice and best practices, and then you stop and you pause and assess yourself. You know, what am I good at? What do I maybe need to work on throughout the whole book? That's how it.
And is your goal to get people to use this as sort of a launching point to then engage you directly? Or are you hoping that the workbook is, because it's a $49 workbook, so it's comparable to.
Yeah, it's 33, the paperback.
Okay.
Yeah.
33. So, yeah. That's not that bad. I was just going to say you can value it to what would you pay for an hour consultation?
Right.
And how far can you get through that? And then they can come to you and hopefully get far more value out of an hour. Do you do that kind of consulting?
I'm not right now. I'm not doing one-to-one career coaching right now because I'm working on getting the book out, and that's
priority.
That's
one.
A lot to do that, right? Yep. But I'm open to, workshops and group coaching, and we're just going to see how this evolves, and speaking at some conferences and things. But I also want to cultivate a group of career coaches that will use this methodology and I can refer people to
them
that they can coach
that.
Against it. Yeah.
And, that was sort of the accidental career path I fell on, is I didn't really intend to be in the publishing field, but after I had done what I did, people started asking me for advice. And and I learned some lessons through trial and error that were pretty painful and expensive that I was able to then pass along. No, you don't have to do that.
Nice.
I did that. Don't make the same mistakes. And I was fortunate. It was timing. Bob talks about how important timing is when you launch your business and probably even your career.
Yeah.
Timing might have been perfect for this idea that when you started school, but now you're out of school, and guess what?
The world changed.
Remember the fact there was a shortage of teachers and everybody went to become teachers, and then all of a sudden there were no more teaching jobs? Same with software development, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody, there was this shortage of software developers, and now we're sort of on the other side of that, where there's more software developers than jobs.
Right.
So anyway, timing is key, but sure. I was just going to say that I got into publishing when the Kindle had just really come out. So there was this whole new medium that all these people and publishers included were trying to figure out. And like you said, I came in from a technology. I was building websites and stuff. So I had the technology background. I came into publishing that hadn't adopted the technology yet, at least for ebooks. So my timing, it was a good connection.
Yeah.
That, again, accidental. I didn't follow your workbook, but I sort of discovered it accidentally that really is a valuable transition when you... again, it was an accident, but I think your book can help people not necessarily land on it by accident, but be more intentional.
Yeah, be more intentional. Yeah. Tons of opportunity. And I think more people can take some time to really, I mentioned earlier, step back and get grounded in who they are, what's important to them, and to really explore all the kinds of opportunities where their gifts can go into the world. The world's waiting for their gifts.
Listen to your mama. You are a valuable person.
Yes.
Don't discount your own talents.
Yeah. And if you don't do some of this, no one else is going to fill it. We're all unique and we all play a role in the world, and it's important to spend the time to explore what that is.
And we all want, everyone should discover that at some point in your life. I hope that everybody finds meaningful work. It's sort of we spend so much of our time. I saw this article on LinkedIn about the infinite workday.
Yeah.
Because now corporations are having Zoom calls at night and on weekends. It's like, where does the workday end and begin? Yeah. There's a blurred line now.
Sure.
Well, if you want to keep your job, you better step up, especially at these fast rising tech companies.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope everyone gets the opportunity to find meaningful work at some point in their life, and it isn't just the small percentage of people. Like my dad at 83, who's still working because he loves what he does. Or Bob, you know, he doesn't need to work, but he still enjoys what he does, and we're grateful to him, because if it wasn't for him, I'm not sure SoftTech would still be around.
Thank you for listening to Tech Reads, sponsored by SoftTech. If you enjoy today's show, please subscribe and share it with your colleagues. If you have comments, questions, or want to suggest an author for a future episode, visit SoftTech at softec.org and click on the Tech Reads link.